You're listening to 830 AM KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska, K201 DA in King Cove, Alaska.
Welcome to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz. When you grow up in a family of runners in Seward, Alaska, exploring the outdoors by way of trails and adventure is just a part of who you are. And when life gets hard or scary because of personal challenges or loss, turning to nature to get you through it might feel like your only next step. In this episode, we talk to Denali Foldiger-Strabel, a renowned Alaska mountain runner, about her life outdoors in Alaska, what she loves about exploring our state, and how she's leaning on adventuring, running, and skiing to get her through the tragic loss of her identical twin sister, Ruby Blake. That's just ahead on Outdoor Explorer.
You're listening to Alaska Public Media on KSKA Anchorage, FM 91.1. The Anchorage Community Concert Band is honoring its mission to keep music performance alive for local audiences. Their next concert is offered for free Sunday, March 30th at 4 p.m. in the Discovery Theater. Prepare to be transported by highlights from the musical Les Miserables, the popular Pavane, and the band masterwork, Suite Francaise. This message sponsored by the Anchorage Community Concert Band.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz. I'm excited to have Alaska mountain runner and my friend, Denali Foldiger-Strabel, here with us today, talking about all things exploring Alaska for adventure, but also for solace. Denali, welcome to Outdoor Explorer.
Thank you, Amy. Thanks for having me.
So let's set the stage here a little bit, if you don't mind. Your family is very involved in the Seward running scene. So maybe give us a little bit of background about you first. Tell us about your family, where you're from, why folks might recognize your name or know your family. Because we all know each other here in Alaska, like in some cases. So tell us a little bit about your family.
I grew up in Seward. My dad was actually born in Seward. So was my brother. My twin sister and I were not, but we came back 6 months later, so I feel like I'm from straight Seward. As part of the running, it wasn't just running, it was adventuring that I grew up with. My parents are avid cyclists too, snowshoers. My father is the type of guy who would snowshoe in the trail for the town. That type of involvement is kind of maybe where a lot of people would hear our name. Also, if you know anything about Mount Marathon, my dad is the darling of the race. I mean, he used to be the safety committee guy. He was on the board. My mother is a two-time winner, and they have been involved with it ever since. I grew up being involved with the race, not just racing it, but volunteering. I used to take up kids up to halfway with my sister, my mother, and Jackie Marshall. And we just had such a blast on that mountain. So that might be where a lot of people might know my name from. I've also dabbled in a few different things, but I would say that Mount Marathon is probably where I might be most famous from.
Yeah. Alaska famous.
And I don't like to use famous. I just like, oh, you know, someone will start talking to me and they'll be all, why do I know you? And I just kind of go down the list of, and then it's usually ends up with, oh, you're from Seward and you do Mount Marathon.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you grew up in a place that people go as a destination.
Right. Right. And if you don't know anything about Mount Marathon, then you surely figure something out about it, at least going down there, or maybe you've lived here for a few years and that's kind of the place to go. So people will slowly start figuring it out and, yeah.
Yeah. What's it like to grow up in a place that is, you know, for Alaskans, a place they go to recreate?
Yeah. Well, the summer, it's fun to look back at it now. I think of my work ethic, and I held down a few jobs at a time for 3.5-4 months, make a lot of money. You can make a lot of money. You don't sleep. You just work. And it's crazy. And it's this huge explosiveness of the tourism. Every shop is open. Everything's ba, ba, ba. And then it's this huge hangover. Everything's closing and nobody's here anymore. And that's where it kind of starts getting more of that, I would say, cliche small town vibe. Everybody knows everybody, the slow moving. There's game night, there's trivia night, there's people snowshoeing up the snow machine tracks. I mean, just people kind of making do. You find your little circle that you hang out with. I would say I had an awesome childhood. I love being from a small town. I love being from a fishing family. And I really learned how to be kind of or acknowledge that community means a lot. And coming from a small town that is really feels isolated in the wintertime, you learn about community and whether it's good or bad. but I mean, just that how, you know, everybody needs to get along at some point, or I mean, we're all in this together type of kind of cliche statements. Those come true in the dead winter in Seward when you feel like you're on this island. So, yeah, it is one big family pretty much when you're living there and going to school and you're part of the community. And yeah, I would say that I definitely get those same feelings now that I'm in the valley. The valley kind of shows that small town, you know, cliches again, the things that are really true. Like, oh, yeah, this is small town. Yeah, that's how I feel about Seward.
Yeah. So if you're working like three jobs in the summer at the part of the year that it's the best for going and doing the adventures that we all like to do, how do you make time for balancing? You worked at like car rental, right? Like, so how do you make time for like renting cars to tourists and then skedaddling to go maybe somewhere that tourists aren't necessarily?
So when I first started that job at Hertz Car Rental, I didn't have to fight that as much. My boss knew, but that pretty much I needed to have 4th of July off and I needed to have time to go out, to go outside. And I actually fortunately worked 10-hour days, so I got 2-hour lunch breaks. And I would just ride my bike to Mount Marathon, go up it real quick to halfway or whatever, and then come back and work the next half of the day. Or it was things like I would go in uber early with my father and sleep in the car, get an extra morning nap, ride my bike down to Hertz. And then he would, or my mother would come and grab all my gear. And then I would just maybe spend the last 2 hours in my bike gear in the office. And just kind of everybody knew that if there was any spare moment, I was finding it to get outside and get out of the office. So yeah. I've always been upfront with my employers that, well, I can't work weekends, not just because I want my weekend off, but I race, I train, I do all of this. And yeah, there's been plenty of times where I'm thinking, this is kind of embarrassing. What's the point of this? And I'm an adult. Should I just grow up? But I mean, it's my passion. And I've always been from the beginning, like, okay, how can I rent these people these cars? How can I then be the waitress at night? And so I was pretty much either running or biking to and from work.
Yeah. There's this like a Jim Gaffigan comedian bit where he says something like, why are all these people wearing fleece vests all the time or like hiking clothes all the time? Did they think like a hike's going to break out? But like we do actually think that, like, you got to be ready. A hike might break out and like legitimately you have to go on it.
Yeah. There would be days where we're not getting anybody in and all the cars are in and she would just say, girl, go run home. And I'd be like, thank you. I'm biting at the bit to get out of here. Yes, I definitely had that anxiety of like, oh, great, another customer. Please come on in. And as I'm like putting my bike helmet on and saying, I can get you, no problem.
Yeah, I mean, but isn't that just like what Alaska is and what it, you know, what we do here when outdoors is a priority to us? Like, you know, a hike might break out or run might break out. You have to go.
Yeah.
It's an emergency.
Yes.
In fact, you know, I mentioned in the introduction that you and I are friends. There's been time that you've texted me like, I'm running by your house. And I was like, I'm ready.
Available? Yes. Be ready.
ETA 5 minutes. And I'm like, I'm on it, you know.
And those are the best runs. Yes. I do. I enjoy that I can run in places now and think, hey, there might be a friend who's up for a few miles.
Yeah, with like a 10-minute warning. A run might break out. I'm cleaning my kitchen, but it's fine. You're listening to Alaska Public Media Outdoor Explorer. I'm talking to Denali Strabel. This is your host, Amy Bouchatz, and we're talking about exploring outdoors in Alaska and about running and about using the outdoors for all of the things we love to use it for, including adventure and for solace, too. So talk to us a little bit more about Seward. You've mentioned Mount Marathon, but surely you have other favorite trails and runs there. So talk to us about what adventurous Alaskans are missing right now when they head that way. Like, what's the secret? Or, I mean, you don't have to share your secrets, but maybe you should think about it. Maybe some of them. Feature one.
Yeah. One secret. No, not a secret, but I think people kind of overlook it. When you're coming into Seward, you're not quite to city limits yet, and there's this road called Nash Road. If you go down Nash Road far enough, there is a pullout that will take you up what we call Mount Alice. And when you get up to the very top of Mount Alice, Seward Mountains, you hardly get to the true summit. So when I say top to Mount Alice, the runner's way top, when you get to there, you actually get to see the view that nobody gets to really see, and that is Mount Marathon, the town, the Resurrection Bay, because you're on the other side of the bay. So you get to see this picturesque little small town, and then you can actually walk over and see the maximum security prison.
So it's like a whole breadth of adventure.
Yeah. So once you get up and above, you can see there's these sights and you can look down and see the prisoners. You're not that close. Would you look over like, what is that? And then look far behind is the dry dock. So you get to see a lot of what you're not seeing in Seward. And just up there is so rugged. It's so beautiful, though. Like, you can't believe that your 2 feet brought you to this place. And I think that's what people feel when they go on Lost Lake, when they go Mount Marathon. They get to a certain point and they just can take a breath and be like, oh, this was worth it. And so Mount Alice, you're kind of thinking the whole time, ugh, is this worth it? And you really, you got to get up there. You have to get above treeline. And then it's just this, wow, I've never even seen Seward this way besides in a picture. Like, it is the generic picture of Seward. And you just get to sit there on a rolling hill, have a little lunch. And it's one of my favorite spots that, again, I think most people overlook. So yeah. Mount Alice down Nash Road. Go do it.
Yeah. No, but the experience you're describing is that moment of making it worth it, you know, and yeah, you do see that on Lost Lake, where you come up above the tree line, if you come in from the Primrose side, and you pop up there and you turn around and you see Kenai Lake, and then you continue on and, you know, to that point where you can see down into Seward or out to the Resurrection Bay. And it's just this magic moment, like, okay, yeah, all right. So that sweat, you know, the mud or whatever when I thought there was a bear. All of those things were worth it, right? Coming up here for this moment where I'm in this high alpine and I get to, you know, see it. Yeah, it's worth it. Do you like Lost Lake too, though? That's a special one to you, right?
That is a special one. And I would suggest people start at the mile 12 trailhead and go on the original Iditarod trail that kind of parallels. So you could either get it by mile 12, it's a little parking lot, or you can get it by Grayling Lake. So if anyone searches up those trailheads, but they're just trails that kind of parallel. And if anyone's been on Lost Lake, starting at the Primrose side, those trails mimic the Primrose side, just that kind of Jurassic, where am I? But you are close to the road, so you are safe. But it feels like another world back there. And I don't know really how the trails kind of connect anymore. It's been a decade or two since I've been there, but that's how I used to secretly hop on Lost Lake. And then you could just, you know, get onto Lost Lake. And so I suggest people venture out on that Meridian Grayling Lake. That is such a neat area. And yeah, Lost Lake is I can't race it as well as I know I could, because I daydream when I'm out there and then I go, oh no, I'm in a race. Oh goodness. But I like am pausing when you should be racing and I'm thinking, is everybody having this magical moment? And
yeah. Well, it's comforting to hear that, because that's definitely my experience trying to race that. I will race, I guess, when I get to the part where I can't see anything.
Yeah. When I'm going downhill and I just have my head head down anyways. Yeah. But up at the top of the High Point, past the Boy Scouts, I'm just thinking, oh, and I even talked to the Boy Scouts who were out there giving water. I'm like, aren't you boys just having so much fun? And they're like, yeah. Are you racing? I'm like, oh, yes. Tra-la-la.
Yeah. Very relatable. I'm glad. I mean, it's comforting to hear that elite
safe
racers
space
have that.
On Lost Lake. You don't have to race the whole trail.
It's comforting to hear even elite racers have that experience that the rest of us mid backpack folks are like, tra-la-la, look at the lupine, look at the lake. Yeah, so on and so forth. I totally get it. What gets you outside to run an adventure? What is it about that is important to you?
Oh, I think that's an ever-evolving answer. I think at this moment in my life, there is a specific reason that I need to get out. I feel like I am the best version of myself after getting out. I feel I've become a morning person for the last, 15 years. So when do you start saying that you're a morning person? I guess I'm a morning person. But just starting my day outside, that is one of the most important things to me because I do not function well if I've been cooped up. And I'm very sensitive, I guess, because being cooped up for 2 hours has me thinking, I need to get out of here. So waking up with a plan to always be out and then dealing with the rest of the day, how I deal with the rest of the day. So outside, I mean, since a child, my parents, their friends, everybody, it was not about bad weather, just that, okay, we can't control this, but we can control our attitude. And so I've always felt as though every day is a day that you can spend majority of it outside. And I've manifested that life and I've really worked hard for that type of life. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing in this moment right now is because I prioritize outside. And I'm not ashamed to say it anymore. I think back in the day, I'm like, well, I'm not an All-American. I'm not an Olympian. But it's just a lifestyle up here. Like when I put all those goals, like, oh, I have to be someone to just be a runner. And I'm not even a professional runner. I'm not sponsored. I just really love being outside. Running is the most easiest thing for me because me and gear just kind of adds a whole thing that I would just, yeah. So I think that the outdoors, I came back to Alaska knowing that I need this lifestyle in order to be a good human being.
Yeah. And you were in California for a while.
I was. I left to California, ran cross country, track, roads, did that whole kind of traditional path of running. And then I came back kind of burnt out from life and everything. And then I started dabbling back into running on the trails, biking. I even dabbled in skiing, which is crazy because I am a lifelong Alaskan, but I didn't grow up skiing. So I learned how to ski mostly because I married a skier and Anchorage has a amazing community around skiing. It's a pretty big deal. So I kind of naturally found other outlets that I think helped me to return back to running competitively.
How was the experience of being somebody who's like, oh yeah, I just like being outside? Do you feel like that's very accepted here as compared to your experience with that attitude in California?
Yeah. Thinking back now, I learned a lot about myself through what others kind of said, like the comments that people say, and not bad comments, just things that they would say. And I'd think, oh, they think I'm very outdoorsy. Like just the way I'm presenting myself is just this kind of what I guess I thought was radical outdoorsy. I was radical outdoorsy to some of these people in California. So that kind of made me think, wow, am I an outdoor person? And so not being in an area that it's just, I mean, I don't think Anchorage people understand that the connection of all the trails and the paths and everything, that you really wouldn't need a car here. That doesn't happen a lot. And that didn't happen where I was down in California. So just everyone thought I was kind of cuckoo for walking. And I mean, I walked 4 miles one time to the grocery store and I just had a nice rolly basket to roll back my groceries. And I remember my seniors picked me up and said, what are you doing out here? And I'm like, well, I mean, I could just walk. And so the things I did that were normal here, it was just, get in the car. What are you doing? Right. And I didn't think I was in danger or anything. It was just this, we don't do that. Just get in the car if you need a ride. But here, it's just kind of, it's so easy. It's made easy. I think it's made natural. We're all kind of integrated into this lifestyle. So there's not really too many people who say, that's wacky that you sold your car and you bought a fat tire bike. Like, I know so many people who have done that. That would be absolutely crazy down where I was, just where I was. I know there are more outdoor places in California, but where I was city. So
yeah.
I think that that needs to be known.
But our proximity to trails and mountains and such, like you're talking about in Seward, I have to finish my job at the rental car agency so I can go down the street and run up a mountain during my lunch break. Okay. But people do this not just in Seward. You know, people do this in the Valley. People do this in Anchorage, you know, after work. I'm going up Near Point. I cannot tell you how many times I hear people saying this. That blows the mind of folks that we know in the lower 48. I was out on Lazy Mountain with my son a couple of weeks ago. He's 12, and I'm watching these 12-year-old kids run down the backside of Lazy Mountain, this gorge, you know, Cook Inlet in the distance, the Knick Arm. And I'm just thinking, like, this is blowing my mind that this is just a Saturday afternoon. This is just what the 12-year-old children do here. They run down mountains in the middle of, you know, you feel like you're in the middle of nowhere, but you're not.
Lately, I have been, maybe gratitude, I'm not sure, but I pause and I think of those things. I think, this is my life. This is what I get to do. And then when I run into someone else on the mountain, I'm thinking, this is what we get to do. This is normal. Or I love when you start in a parking lot and then you come back and it's full and you didn't see half the people. You just know people are in the woods, and it's so cool. It's not weird at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, and your definition, like, of what crowded might be varies so widely.
Let me tell you. Yeah. Seward, I've three communities, Seward, Anchorage, and the Valley all have their different vibe, I guess. And I definitely am back to a mixture of, as I'm in the Valley now, a mixture of city and small town, because there's not a lot of people like Anchorage where the trails are getting packed in, but there is way more knowing that it's not just my dad snowshoeing and then I'm going after him. So the Valley kind of at least has, well, maybe 7 people or 15 people will get on this trail.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Or, you know, and then in Anchorage, you come down to like the Huffman Trailhead and there's like 11 bajillion people there.
Oh, if you don't make your early start, I've told friends before that, oh, no, I'm not going there. I'll meet you in the mountains. And they're all, no, we're going to go to the sunny side. I said, no, it's 10 a.m. on a Saturday. I'll meet you. I'll find you.
Yeah, for real. Okay, so you mentioned you live in three places. Do you have a preferred place you like to adventure and run? Anchorage, Valley, or Seward? I don't mean to make you pick one or forsake your childhood by not picking Seward. But
no, know. I think that I've lived three different lives personally. Mm. The way I in Seward, I took it all for granted. I love every trail, and I started journaling young. That's what my father does. He writes stories each run, and so I've done that since I was a child. And it's fun to look back, but I realize I knew nothing of the beauty that I was running. Nothing. And then I left to California. And so when I came back to Anchorage, it was a different type of runner that I'd become. Definitely more mountain runner. I think people think I'm a mountain runner, but I only did Mount Marathon. I didn't do any other mountain races outside of Mount Marathon until I was probably 23. So, I mean, 23 is not that old, but I've been running mountain marathon since I was 9. So I think... Yeah, and Anchorage was such a fun place. These mountains are so easily accessible. Like, it's just crazy to me that you can do all these ridgelink ups just by one trailhead. And I've been out there for 11 hours and came back just, wow. And I didn't really go anywhere, but I went somewhere. And now in the Valley, I think I'm a mom, I'm a businesswoman, I've got a lot on my plate. So when I find time outside now... I'm I'm taking it all in. I'm doing a lot more slower things than I ever have just because I need to take it all in more and more. And I've only been in the Valley a few years. So I'm super excited for what maybe the next 10 years has for me in store for Valley mountain stuff. And Hatcher Pass is something that I really would love to explore more.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz, and we're talking to Denali Strable about running in Alaska and about using the outdoors for adventure and for solace. After this break, we'll have more with Denali.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
You're listening to Alaska Public Media
on KSKA Anchorage,
FM 91.1.
Connecting Alaskans, life, and form.
Filipino-Americans are one of the largest resident demographics in Alaska, with a long, rich history in our state. The fisheries industry brought many Filipino people here initially, and today, Filipino-Alaskans are a big part of the economic and cultural landscape of Alaska. We'll hear from members of this vibrant community about how they're celebrating and sharing their culture throughout the state on the next Alaska Insight.
Friday night at 7 on Alaska Public Media Television.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm talking to Denali Strable. We're on Alaska Public Media, and we're talking about heading outside to run for adventure, but also for solace. Denali, earlier in our conversation, you mentioned marrying into a ski family. So I would love to know, what is it like to go from like runner family to ski family, and all of a sudden you're engrossed in a family where this a different sport? It's not entirely unrelated, but it's... It takes a whole different skill set. And it's not just a ski family you married into. You're Strable now. And and in the Valley in particular, the Strables are known for really founding so many of our Valley trails, ski trails. Your father-in-law, Ed Strable, really was pivotal to that, to our ski trails in the Valley. Mark Strable is a cross-country ski coach at Colony High School. Your husband, Eric, is now the cross-country ski coach at Palmer High School. You're Strable now. What's it like?
I will say that no matter the sport, it's the same characters. So it's been a joy to be, I guess, a bystander through all of this. I love watching the operations of what goes into creating a ski trail, what goes into creating a ski community. And it's been fun that when I ski around, I can wear lots of layers and nobody knows who I am. I think that I have gotten better, but I think that when you don't grow up skiing, I think with an adult body, it's just hard to make your body move the way it probably should glide. And so when I watch Eric and I watch Mark ski on skis, it must be how people see me run down mountains, like as if I'm just effortless. And I can appreciate the way that Glenn and Ed raised those boys on skis, but not in a way where they needed to prove anything because they were on these skis. And I can definitely relate to that because I didn't ever grow up, you need to race. I grew up with, we run because this is how we make sense of the world. And I feel like Eric grew up with kind of the same thing of, oh, you're just really good at this. But you love this first and let's continue the love versus getting this whole like, bah, you need to do this and that and this and that. And really, Ed is a phenomenal guy. It's crazy to be now pretty much having my father in a different version. I mean, because if there's something that needs to be done, Ed's gonna do it and try to help, but he's just gonna get it done. And that's the father I kind of grew up with. So it is funny for me to watch this whole system, and it's the same characters, but it's comfortable for me. I love being part of it, even though I'm embarrassed with my own skiing skills. I just think, like, maybe I bring some comedic relief or something like that. Or you know, my nieces who are learning how to ski, they feel much better when I'm skiing. So they're like, oh, I don't look like that. So, you know, I just hope I make people feel comfortable.
You said earlier that for your family, running was how you made sense of the world. And since you said that, and we've been talking, that's been replaying in my mind, because what you're describing with Stig is how he makes sense of the world right now is through the context of how our family takes care of the trails, the respect for the space, the fact that all of these kids are outside and I'm outside too. You know, the family we married into makes sense of the world by skiing. But that's just a relatable thing, I think, to everybody who does enjoy exploring outside, because that's what's core to our culture here of being people who love to go outside and explore where we live, because it is how we make sense of our world, that you can go on this hike, that you can head into Hatcher Pass, that you can head out to Nancy Lakes, that you can do whatever it is that speaks to you, and the world just opens up and everything sort of becomes, the pipes unclog and everything becomes clear. And I love that.
Yeah, and I think that you don't have to be competing to be doing stuff like this. You and I have talked about this before. I mean, we have so many amazing friends who kind of say, oh, I'm not an athlete. And I'm all, yet you just spent 4 hours skinning up a mountain. And that's how you chose to spend your day. You're an athlete.
Right.
But maybe we shouldn't call ourselves athletes. We're just outdoor people. And I think that whatever group you find yourself in, I mean, even if you're in a hockey stadium inside, or curling, or something else that is inside, you're still getting together with a community that, I mean, I think that's worth something. And so maybe I'm more leaning towards, like, sports help us create a community, or maybe outdoors help us create a community. And when you put those two together, it's something that's really cool. But I want to make it clear that, like, I am a big advocate of you are a runner no matter what pace you're doing. Mm-hmm. If you choose to go outside and put yourself out there, you're doing it. And then if you have to be on the treadmill, you're doing extra, because most people don't want to do treadmills. So it's like, mm-hmm. Find your little victories and find out, like, okay, well, this I'm an outdoor person, and these people are like-minded, and we don't need a race. But if you want a race, I think that's cool too.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things you've been heading outside recently for is moving through the grief of your loss of your identical twin sister, Ruby. Many folks listening to this might have encountered Ruby on social media and might have known her from that, or seen her in the world, because she was just as involved in our outdoor world as you are. Would you mind just telling us about Ruby?
Yeah. Okay. Ruby. Oh, my. Okay. Excuse me.
We can take a break if you want to.
No, it's okay. It's okay. It's just, how do I quickly talk about her?
Don't quickly talk about her.
Okay. So Ruby, I think, was like all of us and kind of bumping around in the dark in our 20s. And I personally felt like she was just starting to find her way. We come from a long line of fishing people, captains, pilots, hunting guides. We are, I mean, people think we're Alaskan because of the mountain marathon, but we are established in a lot of other branches. And she got on the boats for the first time with my brother, and then eventually with her husband, Derek. And they created this life that, I mean, is an outdoor person dream. They had a great operation, and then she had her child, Harbor, and it was like everything was coming together for her. And I think she was a courageous and stubborn woman, but she was she was so loving and so creative, and her death leaves a huge hole in my world.
She died about 2 years ago, right? Yeah. In a boating accident in Kodiak, and leaving behind her daughter and you and your family and her husband, and this tremendous hole that you're talking about. And since then, I know, because we've spoken about it, that you've been heading outside to find ways to move through that. So, you know, we've talked a lot about the joy of heading outside, and I think there's joy in sneaky moments all the time, but sometimes that's not the driving force. So I'm wondering if you'll talk to us about heading outside to find the other side of this, to find the solace that I think we all know the mountains can bring, but maybe haven't had to experience the way you have.
Yeah, I would say that when this all first happened, I think that it was too catastrophic for me to deal with. I think that our society doesn't like to deal with death. I mean, there are so many cultures around the world that openly grieve and openly sob. And I would say that a lot of everybody I know doesn't do that, and we're uncomfortable with death. And so me being kind of, I think, strong or wonderfully stoic was actually inside. I was in disbelief and in utter shock that I couldn't really be here. I was kind of detached from this world. Losing a twin, I would think, would be how maybe a younger sibling feels. Like, all they've ever known is their siblings. But like Ruby and I, attachment started in utero, and I never thought of these things until she was gone. That there's just this missing part that, unless you're a twin, like, there's no word for it. And so when I was able to, I don't know, I kind of blacked out the first few months there, but I did continue to race that year because I was already signed up for races, and Ruby would have been really mad if I wouldn't have raced. So, you know, I was in great shape. you know, I could just, anyway, it's like, she would have been so bummed. Like, oh, what are you talking about? So I just kind of like started going outside, realizing that the world moves on, that my brain, and I found this out being on a mountain over and over and over again, and sitting there and crying and screaming and throwing rocks and specifically picking mountains that nobody was on so I could just let it all out. And what I've come to find, like, as of now, and it's only been 2 years, so I bet you in 6 months I'll have a different answer. But that my brain can understand the logic of death. I mean, we're born and we die, and I've been that way my whole life. Like, death doesn't really bum me out, because that's kind of what we're here to do. And not to be so morbid about it, but I've always felt this way. And then, but it's my heart, because love transcends death. And I don't think there's a way to ever tell my heart that she's gone, because that doesn't matter to my heart. And it's kind of like going up into the mountains. Like, every time I go up into the mountains, my heart is full. And if I never went up a mountain again, at least I know I had gone up the mountains. And it's like this kind of confusing thing, but like, that's where I'm at right now with it, is that I can mentally say, yeah, she's gone, and I was lucky to have her, and the tears mean, you know, what they mean, like all those quotes you hear of, oh, this is just the love that has nowhere to go, or blah, 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 all those things I love, but also I'm sick of hearing. And then my heart's like, I don't understand why you're crying, because we love her and she's going to pop through this door. And my brain's going to be like, you just broke our heart again, heart, thanks. But it's that feeling of like, what happens if she does come through that door? And that love bursts through me, and it's not this like, you know, that I'm not understanding that she's not here anymore. But when I'm in the mountains, everything just slows down. And I'm finally able to say, yeah, this sucks. This is the worst thing that could ever happen to me. But then I get to be in this mountain, and some odd reason I'm still here. And then I just sit. And I don't think a lot of people sit anymore. I don't think, like, we sit in the silence, sit in the grief. And because when you start sitting up there on the mountaintops, you realize there's birds, there's wind, there's weird sounds. I don't know. Sometimes things creep me out, but it's just kind of like there's so much more going on around me. I mean, I may feel like I'm the main character in this, but there is just so much bigger things happening out here that I don't know why I'm still here. I don't like it. But if I am going to still be here, I might as well continue to run. I might as well continue to be an outside person, because I'll be damned if I spend the next 30 years just hidden away in a crumbled ball, super sad, because I can be sad in a beautiful place, I guess.
How has this, or has this, changed over time? How you find that, how you go, how you get it, how you sit there, has that grown and shaped over time, or was that your natural instinct as soon as you were able to get yourself out the door?
It's all such a blur. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I'll just say that when something like this happens and someone dies, you're living, you're going through the motions. But if it wasn't for my running logs, I wouldn't have even known that I had ran. Mm-hmm. And I think the like my first memory, unfortunately, is like an unfortunate memory, is really like Mount Marathon, when someone said, "Wow, you're looking really skinny." And I just looked at them and I said, "Thanks, my sister just died." And then I realized, whoa, I said that out loud. And it was as if a light switch turned on. Mm. And I was seeing the world. And so that was probably 2 months after. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why it was that, but I've talked to other people where it's been most random thing, where it's as if my ear has been popped and all of a sudden I'm coming to the world and I'm thinking, where have I been these last 2 months? And now I'm angry. Mm-hmm. Now I'm raging, and it's just so consuming.
Mm-hmm. How has your relationship with Mount Marathon changed? You know, this is something you did together for a long time, and it's, you know, we've talked a lot about it today. It's something that you continue to do. Do you feel about it the same way you did before?
I think that Mount Marathon is always going to be hard for me, because when I get there the day of, there's thousands of fans, when usually my world is nobody cares about mountain running. So it's hard for me, because no matter where in the world my sister was, even if she was on a boat on a satellite phone, she'd call me, she'd text me, she'd tell everybody. Even if they didn't understand what Mount Marathon was, she had people watching it. She'd tell me what Denali's doing, blah, 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 blah. And then the few years that she did come, it was just a blast when us siblings got together. And it's just like, I think that the race is the race, but the actual mountain of Mount Marathon holds so much of my heart. So the day, yeah, I want to run to win, but I'm also there to celebrate my life and my community. And when my sister would come, it was the best thing. And now, like, she's never physically going to be there ever again. And so I could be probably in amazing shape, and when that gun goes off, I could just hear her voice, and or maybe not. I don't know. So I'm wondering what's going to happen for the next few years at this race, because I think that I'm so early in this grief journey that when I get on that mountain, I'm so exhausted that I don't have any walls. So it's I'm climbing a 30% grade, and I'm also looking over and saying, oh, that's where Ruby and I used to picnic. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Oh, shoot, she's not here. And then you're thinking, I'm in a race. I can't be thinking about this yet. So the last two races, it's just been, it's been that way. And I try to keep my blinders on. So I guess, yeah, it has changed the race for me. I'm still figuring out how the heck I'm going to race. And maybe from now on, I just participate and maybe I never win that race. And that's fine. I think people get this narrative about me that I want to win the race. And duh, every athlete wants to win. But for me, it's the career stats and that I just want to get my 20 and I want to get as many high marks on the board that I can. But if I just have to participate until my 20, then I'm going to just participate. Nothing's going to keep me from that race. Ruby would be uber mad if I quit now. I mean, this was like a bet we had when we were 9 years old. Well, our mother never talked about her career stats. And Ruby found out quickly after our first senior race that she said, I'm not going to ever be anywhere near mom's stats. You're going to have to do it. And so I've been trying to get as many sub-hour finishes as I can and as many 13-minute sub-downhills as I can. My mom still has me and will always have me as the top three finishers. I think she was third. Christy Marvin's now first, obviously, but she was up there, and so I learned that quickly. Like, oh, I'm not gonna get that one. But so I think I just have to remember that, like, Ruby would want me to be here. Ruby would want me to be doing this, and as cliche as that is, I do have to hold on to that.
You've been writing poetry recently and journaling. Okay, how much of that do you do outside as part of your adventure, or how much of it is fueled by heading into the mountains for this solace that we've been talking about?
I would say majority of my writing start outside. And I'm somebody who, I suggest this to everybody who doesn't ask, I put this on them. Take one of those, is it the all-weather paper notebooks? You can get them at Horty Marmot. You can get them anywhere here. Take one of those, just have them in your pack. And just always have a little pen on it. And you just never know. You never know. And I like to keep mine in the front pack. And I'll do a scribble, scribble, scribble. And then maybe never come back to it or come back to it. And so a lot of my writings, especially the poetry, starts in the outdoors. And then I'll go home. And I'm thinking about it, I'll write it right then and there. Or it takes me a few weeks to kind of get a whole poem out. But once I do, I feel happy because I know that secretly one of those passages, and nobody knows but me, oh, like, okay, that was where I was on Government Peak. So each one of my writings, a paragraph or a sentence, something, always has kind of like an Easter egg for me to be like, oh, yay, that was when I was up so-and-so. So, I mean, maybe I could tell people like, oh, I wrote this on this mountain, but I've always kind of kept it to myself. Yeah. And it's a fun thing that don't know how I find my own magic.
Yeah, no. And you say no one's going to ask, but I was going to ask. So do you have anything else that you've discovered in this journey or other parts of your journey outside that you recommend that people do to be able to connect the dots on this magic that you're finding for yourself as you move through this experience?
Well, so are you talking about if someone is specifically going through grief or just wants to be outside?
Going through grief, or if someone's going through grief or other types of heavy, hard things in life that going outside can help them with. Is there anything that you do recommend that they do? Or maybe, you talked earlier about just sitting, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, this is an underappreciated thing. It's so funny because it's like, well, I mean, you could just sit down. You know? But we don't think about that. We get to the top. It's a little cold. You're like, my snack's gone, and let's go home. You know, how many of us take the time to like sit in the tundra for a minute?
Right. I didn't. I'm a racer. I go up to the summit to get down fast. And yeah, bye. I would suggest not having headphones, not having any distractions, and even if it's just a short walk. I know not everybody can, but try to get on a trail, try to get away from cars, try to get somewhere where you feel safe and you can really zone out and look around and not zone out inside yet. I mean, that's for another time, but I say first start zoning out, looking all around, and what comes to your mind when you look at that tree? Or, I mean, I would hope that you would start seeing wow, there's a lot of trees out here. Wow, there's big mountains. Wow, this world is so big and I am so small. You know, just start recognizing that I am not the main character here. And even though I feel like I'm the main character, there's so much going on around me that I have no control over. And how lucky am I to live in this life that has me on this trail? And maybe that's another gratitude walk. Or with the kids, we go, I wonder walks. And so you walk around and you say, I wonder what that is. Or I wonder if those trees are the Earth's mustache. I don't know. You say crazy things like that to a toddler, but you know, it gets them talking. So, you know, just find that wonder, like, wow. Yeah.
But what you're talking about is this wonder that you're talking about that we're so good at pointing out to our three-year-olds, right? Is such, like, if you can harness that sort of childlike play in your own outdoor time, it makes it way more fun. You know, it's like, it takes it from being like, I'm out here for a job, I'm out here to do a task, I'm out here to get it done, I'm out here to hit this peak, I'm out here to do this workout or whatever, to like, I'm out here just to enjoy this experience. And like that brain switch, I don't know if this is just something that I struggle with because I'm just very goal oriented, right? But that brain switch is the difference between this was as restorative as it could have been, or this felt a little bit like work.
Right, right. And I personally never want this to feel like work, not even the racing. The racing are just times where I celebrate, but for sure, I was someone who had their head down and said, I'm going to get up near point because I just got done with work and I got to get up there quick. But I will say the one thing after having a child, and all parents can probably nod their head to this, that I wasted a lot of time when I didn't have a child. So it's
co-signed.
Like, right? Right. Yeah. So it's just kind of like, understand if you have time to be outside, be outside. Don't have time to say, okay, I've got to do this because this is what's on my training log, or, oh, someone I know did this, so I want to do this. It's like, get outside. And if you have an hour, make sure that hour brings you back to the car and you feel better. Yeah. You don't ever want to feel like, you know, everyone always says, oh, you'll never regret a time outside. No, I've regretted a few times. I've regretted a few times. And I think that if you're, I mean, and I'm goal, I mean, my goals are out there. I have to really remind myself that, well, what's the big picture here? And what is my reason why? And if I didn't have to race, would I still be out here? And yes, I would.
Right. As you've walked this journey, you have done it from a different place. Like, you moved to the Valley not terribly long before Ruby's death. Is there something special about moving to a new area and then tackling something like this? Or do you wish you had been in a place where you knew everything there was to know about the local mountains while you went through that?
I think that moving is hard in general. And I am a type of person who likes to move. And I know right now it's hard to keep in contact with my Anchorage community because majority of us have toddlers. And I don't...
Toddlers do make everything very difficult.
Right. And most girlfriends are like, I don't know how to support you. And I say, just by saying I don't know how to support you supports me right now, honey boo boo, because you've got babies at home. I've got babies at home. It's OK. I don't want anyone to feel bad that they're not supporting me. And I think that at first, maybe I thought that it would have been easier in Anchorage. But also, I know that it would have been hard no matter what. And having a new area to explore, I mean, is isolating because I choose to isolate myself by going at 6 a.m. up a mountain when everybody else doesn't want to go. You know, I specifically do things that kind of isolate myself. But I also know that I am trying hard to immerse myself in the community as best I can. But definitely, I think I'm appreciating that there's a new adventure to be had. Mm-hmm. And it's easier for me to check out of the sadness of grief. I think everyone thinks grief and they only think sadness, but there are, I mean, I don't want to say it like this. It's not that there are good things in grief. It's just the good things that happen. I learn to appreciate them. Like when I'm actually happy, Yeah, I get a little guilty about, oh God, I'm happy and my sister's dead. But also I think, wow, I'm a human having this human experience and I get to be happy and I'm going to be happy and I'm not going to let anything rob me of that. And it's I think, easier to do that when you're in new mountains because, I mean, lately everything's been an adventure and I'm not sick of anything yet. And I just wonder that if I was in Anchorage and I did all the same things over and over again, that maybe I would have been burnt out or maybe I'm not really sure. But I have to believe, and no matter what your faith is, I think having faith is courageous, believing in something outside of you, no matter what it is. And I just have to have faith in what I believe and that there are bigger things happening in the works and I control nothing. And that I'm here to try and have a good human experience. And so that means that I have to accept the cruel things that happen too, as cruddy as that is. And I'm still learning to accept that life can still be beautiful, even though I have half of my soul ripped out of me and I don't even know how I'm going to make this. But I've got a little boy who's depending on me and I've got friends and family who are depending on me. So going up to Hatcher's Pass, and I've only been up there a few times. Yeah, right now it's probably the best thing that's happened to me because it makes me feel like, wow, this is God. God is here and he's, you know, like maybe this is God. I don't know, but it gives me this feeling of, like, I'm supposed to still be here.
Yeah,
I'm not going to care about why right now, but in this moment, I'm okay with being here.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier that you're not the main character, but it's having that perspective that mountains give you that, and you can bring main character energy up there as you go, and have that juxtaposition where you are so big and so small at the same exact time somehow, and it all comes together.
Yeah, I love that feeling.
Yeah.
I love that feeling, being humbled, but also being on top of the world.
Yeah, well, and sometimes literally, because like you stand on a mountain's top, you're like, hello, I'm woman, I did this.
Yes. Hello down there. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a good feeling. What's next for your running season?
I am going to be heading down to Broken Arrow. It is a 50K. It's going to be a USA championship selection race. So it is going to be a highly competitive race. We'll see how I fare. I'm going down there with family and I'm going to go celebrate something. It's an area that my sister and I used to go to when we were in college. And so it's just going to be a lovely full circle. I'm going to bring some ashes of my sister. That's one cool thing I've been doing. I'll flip that in there, is that I've been bringing my sister's ashes all around the world. I think that if someone is hoarding their loved one's ashes, which it's okay if you are, but if you want to do something cool, I have been keeping the coordinates of where I've been dropping Ruby, and I think she would think it's fantastic. She's in a few different countries, and I mean, it's a really cool map. And so I'm looking forward to the race, but I'm also looking forward for kind of just the celebration of, if Ruby was here, she would be at this race with me. She'd be here. And so I'm going to bring a little bit of her ashes, bring my mom, bring my aunt, bring everybody, who we're just going to have a toast to Ruby. And then 12 days later, I'm going to attempt Mount Marathon. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, I will be definitely waiting to hear about that and or attending. Denali, thank you so much for joining us on Outdoor Explorer. It's been really fun talking to you, and appreciate your opening yourself up to us.
Well, thank you for having me, Amy.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz. A special thanks to my guest, Denali Strabel, and to our producer, Tobin Shelby. Thanks also to Ammon Swenson for his assistance. And from all your hosts here at Outdoor Explorer, we'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.
You are listening to 830 AM KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska.
KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint. K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove. KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay. KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass. And KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset. Starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sidkenap to Castle Cape, gale warning tonight and Friday. Today, northwest winds 30 knots, gusts to 45 out of bays and passes, seas at 5 feet. Tonight, northwest winds 35 knots, gusts to 50 out of bays and passes, seas at 6 feet with freezing spray.